Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
With Renault's award-winning hybrid and full electric lineup, where style meets tech. Rethink Renault.
This is News Talk.
You're very welcome along to Tech Talk. This is Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. Coming up over the next hour, as Meta makes further job cuts, citing AI as the reason, we'll take a closer look at the Irish jobs market and ask where the opportunities for humans lie. As always, you can email the show techtalk@newstalk.com or you'll find me on Instagram at JessKellyNT. Later in the show, we'll jump into the inbox to answer some of your tech questions, and we'll also take a closer look at the letters from Sky to dodgy box users. But I want to start this week with Meta.
Well, robots are coming for jobs at Meta. The company says about 10% of its workforce, that's about 8,000 people, were told today they're losing their jobs. Meta says it is redirecting payroll into artificial intelligence and planning more than $150 billion in AI capital spending this year. About 7,000 remaining workers will be reassigned to AI roles, while 6,000 planned hires will now go unfilled.
That report from CBS outlining significant job cuts at Meta once again. Now, they had flagged in advance that this was on the cards. Not only will layoffs and transfers impact around 20% of the company's entire global workforce, but also in a letter to staff, Mark Zuckerberg stated that success isn't a given. And AI is the most consequential technology of our lifetimes. The companies that lead the way will define the next generation. Now, it's thought that over 300 of Meta's 1,800 Dublin-based employees will be impacted, along with 700 workers at the third-party company Covalen, which is a main contractor for the company. You might remember we had some of the former employees at Covalen and indeed the representatives on this programme a wee while ago over disputes about the severance that the employees at Covalen receive. But Meta is just one of a number of companies making cuts and citing AI as the reason, with many now claiming these tech giants are, quote, AI washing, using the emerging technology as an excuse to reduce its headcount and therefore its bottom line costs. So what impact will the AI effect have on the overall jobs market, which is also feeling the impact of geopolitical uncertainty? Christopher Payne, country director of the Stepstone Group Ireland with responsibility for Irish jobs, is with me now. Chris, how are you?
I'm really good. Thanks for having me, Jess.
Thanks for joining us. So obviously, as I mentioned there, it's been a turbulent week in terms of the tech jobs market. Before we go down that rabbit hole, can you just talk me through some of the trends that have come out from the latest research compiled by Irish Jobs?
Yeah, absolutely. So we've just published our hiring trends update. And I think Meta aside, because that's the big news story right now, the Irish labour market is actually still in a relatively strong position. And we're just seeing that businesses are being more cautious and it's a more targeted approach to hiring. So obviously our unemployment rate remains really low. It's about 4.8% in April. But we are seeing that job growth is moderating rather than accelerating. So I think right now it's not a hiring freeze story. It's more of a selective hiring story. But in good news, our own research that you've just mentioned has told us that employers are telling us they will be increasing hiring. So 50% or so are going to increase hiring in H2. So it's not all bad news.
And are there certain sectors that are doing better than others? Because, again, as I mentioned at the top of the show, Meta aren't the only ones in the tech sphere that are looking at either reducing headcounts or redeploying people or increasing the use of AI and all the rest. So are there certain sectors that are performing better than others in terms of that jobs growth?
Yeah, there are. And I think the easiest way to sometimes think about it is to link it to where are our large infrastructure projects in Ireland or where do we have problems? So obviously anything linked to housing or Metro North or, road bypasses, things like that. So we're seeing production is particularly strong at the moment in manufacturing. So about 70% of employers have told us they're going to be increasing hiring in H2. And then it's the usual suspects. It's it's engineering, it's construction. Funnily enough, 51% of IT companies did tell us they plan on increasing hiring in H2. So they do plan on hiring more staff. So Meta, I think the larger tech companies, there's definitely, to use that phrase, AI washing, there's definitely a little bit of that happening because, you know, there are publicly listed large companies and they need to make sure that they are cutting their cloth, but also making sure that whatever they go out to the market with is about increasing share price and stuff as well. So, you know, most people in Ireland are employed by SMEs. So we shouldn't get too concerned about just looking at the Metas or the really large tech organizations, as difficult as it is for those 350 or so people who will be impacted.
When we look at the entry level jobs, this is an area that I'm fascinated by because I'm 18 years in News Talk now, but I started as an intern making tea and coffee. Yeah. And the stuff that I learned during that internship, I think has stood to me more than my 3 years of Irish and geography in UCD. That there is something really beneficial to entry level positions. But we're now seeing a bit of a trend, or hearing a bit about a trend, of those lower level positions not being made available in certain sectors because of AI. Is that ringing true in what you're seeing?
Yeah, our research is telling us that, like, 47% of businesses have told us that they plan to reduce graduate roles and entry level roles. And to be honest, Jess, like you, I learned more in my first 3 years. I'm a little bit longer than you, actually, in Irish jobs. I'm here just under 20 years now. And I learned more in my first couple of years, including going through a financial crash that I did also in UCD, but with politics and economics. So I definitely agree with you that learning on the job is important. I think where a lot of graduate roles traditionally, exactly as you just said, involved admin, first drafts, basic analysis, research reporting. Unfortunately, these are the tasks that AI can now support. So employers may expect graduates to add value faster than they did before. But I think that's one of the things that is slightly concerning, because previous research we did also said that employers are crying out for people who have soft skills and that they're really struggling to find people with soft skills. So although the generic graduate role is maybe under pressure, I think if graduates can show they have soft skills like adaptability, emotional intelligence, they'll still have a really good chance. And the other one, of course, is it is kind of like me and you clearly did the same degree in UCD. But I think where we're seeing the real slowdown is where there isn't a clear career pathway. So if you are studying to be an accountant, you will still be able to go through a graduate program because that is a very clear pathway, or a doctor or anything like that. But it is our more generic degrees that are probably coming under a bit of pressure.
Yeah, and I think it's funny for kids who, you know, are about to phase into the leaving cert now. It is increasingly difficult to know what to put down on the CAO form. I remember when I was not long out of college, all the conversations around me were, you should have done programming, you should have been a programmer, that's where the future lies. And now we're hearing that a lot of those jobs are being targeted or replaced or augmented, or whatever language you want to use, by AI. It's very difficult to kind of look into a crystal ball and see what the best or most valuable degree is going to be in 5 years' time. I've been reading some research that shows maybe an apprenticeship, which sometimes isn't looked upon as favourably, could be the way to go.
Well, it's funny you mentioned apprenticeships, because it's something I've probably harped on for about a decade, that I think the way we in Ireland have insisted that everyone goes on to do a third level university degree. And to a certain degree, we can appear a bit snobby towards apprenticeships, but I can no more wire a house than I can wire someone's brain. So whether you're a neurosurgeon or an electrician, you are far more skilled than I am. So they are certainly something that people should never turn their nose up at. And if that is something that you're genuinely interested in and good at, I think it's a huge skill. I heard we are running out of plasterers, for example, but you will never be out of work if you're a good plasterer. But going back to those roles, like, you know, I think with the Meta announcement, we see it again. I think a lot of the roles being targeted are non-AI IT roles. So they are very much focused on that. The only other thing I'd say is there's never been a technological disruption that hasn't created more jobs then it's displaced. And I would hope and think that that probably won't be any different this time. Like, you know, obviously you are much more tech savvy than me, Jess, but if we think about 30 years ago, people weren't thinking about app development because iPhone wasn't out yet, or a digital marketing degree wouldn't have existed prior to Google. So all these technological disruptions do, they do impact in a positive and a negative way. In the short term, where I feel sorry are those university graduates coming out in the next year or two, because there will be less roles. It doesn't mean there won't be, that being a graduate isn't important, but it will be more about what is the skill you can show. And the safest skill in the labour market right now is probably adaptability.
So again, if we're looking at this time next year when we're having this conversation about your 2027 research and so on, is there any indication as to how dramatic the trends will be in terms of difference from this year, if you get what I mean? Like, are we on a trajectory, or is it a bit of a Ronan Keating roller coaster where you just don't know where you're going to go next?
I don't think it's going to be a collapse of any graduate jobs. We are definitely going through rebalancing in the market, but there's some ESRI research out. They expect about 7% of jobs in Ireland would be kind of displaced by AI over the next kind of 5 to 10 years, which is about 180,000 jobs. It's a lot, but in the grand scheme of things, it isn't a huge amount. And of course, that means there will be new jobs created. Like, I have an 8-year-old daughter, and I think by the time she goes to do her CAO form, I have no idea what she'll be looking to do, because it will be hugely different. But I don't think our research, I genuinely would be shocked if we didn't see very similar numbers to what we're seeing now. I don't think most businesses in Ireland are SMB, about 90% of businesses under 50 staff. They are not moving to replace people in the same way. They're using AI to become more efficient. They're using AI to, you know, help them schedule interviews or things like that. But they don't have the big tech capabilities of a Meta, a Google, or anything like that. So most businesses will use AI, become more efficient, but that will just free up time, because in a lot of places, people are already double jobbing. They're kind of working exceptionally hard. So I think that this gives us a unique opportunity for businesses to work smarter in a time when costs are increasing, and not having to pay a huge amount of extra staff. But I don't think it's going to be a collapse of the market at all.
In terms of the disruption and the displacement by AI, Is this an argument for workers to engage in that lifelong learning process? Because even if you are displaced by AI, if you can show that you have, either through your company or off your own bat, engaged in some further education or further upskilling, you're more of an asset, and you're showing, as you said, that those kind of softer skills of a bit of cop on and initiative, it's a more attractive prospect for a potential employer.
100%. And I think the lifelong learning piece is more important than it's ever been. You know, funnily enough, I'm just off a call, and it was all about how can we use Pythia to help us with mid-year performance reviews. You know, we're also trying to, you know, utilize AI in a smarter way to help us improve our processes. It's not about removing people. And I'm trying to upskill, and I'm trying to learn, you know, just to, at the moment, you know, I'm very much okay with generative AI, but that using agents, absolutely nowhere near, but trying to learn. And, you know, I'm thinking that that will make me more valuable to my business. And likewise, it's the same for everyone out there. The soft skills are important, but it's also showing adaptability, that the market is shifting, roles are changing and evolving really quickly. The skills required now in roles are changing. So how are you upskilling to make sure that you're doing it? And there's so many brilliant online courses, particularly now focused at AI. And I think that, you know, I've done a couple, and I think people should be looking at doing them pretty regularly, because it not only helps you in your work, it does actually help you in your day to day as well.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I'm a huge advocate for it. Again, just for expanding your own horizons and keeping yourself engaged and your brain engaged and all the rest. I want to talk a little bit about the job application process, because I know a few people who are going through it at the moment. They're kind of sniffing out opportunities. They're spending a huge amount of time looking at really motivational, inspirational posts on LinkedIn by companies who are announcing hires. They then submit applications on the form that's suggested on these platforms, and then getting auto replies within 6 seconds saying no. And it's clearly some form of AI auto rejection. What exactly is going on?
Yeah, to be honest, Jess, that's not new at all. It's and probably the most frustrating part of being a job seeker is not having that loop filled. One of the things that I think is often more frustrating is never hearing back. And it's something that we encourage everyone who uses Irish Jobs and all employers, whether you're using Irish Jobs or not, close the loop. Let people know if they're not going to be brought forward for interview or if they haven't been successful. Those auto rejections, most businesses who would have 20 or 30 staff or more would have an applicant tracking system in place. They are getting smarter. So the applicant tracking systems have been around 20 years, where you apply for a job, it goes into this applicant tracking system. And there's always been something in the background, just not as sophisticated. It might have been knockout questions or something like that, where are you eligible to work in the Republic of Ireland might be one. And if the answer is no, then they would, auto reject them. Normally, businesses would set them up for 24 to 48 hours later. But it doesn't mean that you're not in the same position, because the frustrating part is I've seen my own wife, who's just recently gone into a new job, get auto rejected on a Sunday. So you know that it's literally been set up for 24 or 48 hours later. So it's incredibly frustrating, but it's not something new, unfortunately.
And is this something, though, that companies need to be careful of? Because I've been talking to one person in particular who's going through this at the moment, and they're seeing AI being utilised in a few different ways, not only the auto rejection, but in a few different ways. And they've actually walked away from one process because it feels so like there's a lack of authenticity and humanity. And it just gives you this bad vibe about a company from the offset if they can't even be arsed to connect with somebody who's taken the time to send in an application.
My opinion on AI for recruiters is fairly simple. I think recruiters should use AI, but in a few practical ways. I think it can help them write job ads really quickly. I think it can help them post jobs to a large number of websites or areas, their own website, Irish Jobs, jobs.ie, to make sure that they're getting as many candidates as possible that are suitable for the job. I think it's brilliant for helping them schedule interviews. You can connect it now to your Outlook and it auto schedules interviews when you're happy with a list of candidates, and it can draft outreach messages, things like that. So the benefit is speed. Like, recruiters are spending about a third of their week on admin. So I think this is a really good opportunity for recruiters to not spend a third of their week on admin. If you want me to be really honest, I'm not a huge fan of screening of CVs using AI. And I also don't really like AI being used to replace the interview process. People work for people and people want to be hired by people. So I would always hesitate caution when it comes to taking this AI project too far in recruitment, because like that person you're speaking of, I would find it incredibly frustrating if I never got to deal with a candidate. And I just mentioned it. My own wife has recently been hired, and she had a really brilliant experience with a really well-known Irish company. And the big thing for her was she had a recruiter who she felt was on her side, letting her know, I'm rooting for you here. You're meeting this person, that person, that person. Here's some tips. And immediately afterwards, how did you get on? So I think that, for me, is something that I think Irish people are much better at than some of our counterparts. And actually, some research said that we're much more empathetic than our, say, German and UK counterparts. I don't think we want to lose that within our hiring process.
No, absolutely not. Right, so let's end where we started, which is with Meta and this notion of the AI washing. For the people who are unfortunately impacted by this, what is the advice in terms of them, firstly, accepting what's happening, then trying to pick themselves back up and get back into the job market? Because if one of the biggest tech companies in the world is saying, do you know what, you're not needed here anymore, it can be a serious, I suppose, crisis of confidence, I suppose, to then reemerge and sell your story and your skill set and your experience to a new potential employer.
Yeah, I you know what, I feel for them. I really do. There's never a nice news story that comes out when you hear people are at risk of losing their jobs. Having said that, well, I would say for these people in particular, they are going to be highly sought after individuals. They're working for one of the biggest companies in the world. They're going to have a huge skill set. They're going to be sought after by many big organizations. So I think that part they should be okay on. But then there is that piece. There's probably people in Meta for 10, 15, 20 years, just like me and you are in our place. And I often think about, God, if I had to go back out to the market and do my CV and do all that. But go back to what are businesses looking for right now? They're looking for adaptability. They're looking for those soft skills. So what can you bring to the table? They want people who can problem solve, who can act in real time, who have emotional intelligence and are a team player. So make sure that you're going out to the market with what they're asking for. And those soft skills, it's creeping up every single time we do research. It is higher and higher in terms of we're struggling to find people with the right soft skills. It's also the reason why we're seeing a lot of businesses mandating back to the office, because just like you mentioned, your first 3 years in News Talk, learning more than you did in your 3 years in UCD, that's where you learn your soft skills. So they want people back in the office for that reason.
Okay, great stuff. Well, look, hopefully we will chat again in a few months' time and we'll get a better picture of what exactly is happening and going to happen, not only in the tech sphere, but other sectors as AI continues to be a bit of a disruptor. Chris Pay of Irish Jobs, thanks so much for joining me here on News Talk.
Thanks a million.
Welcome back to Tech Talk. This is Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. As ever, if you have any questions for me, you can drop me an email to techtalk@newstalk.com. Before the break, we were talking with Chris Pay of irishjobs.ie about what's going on in the world of big tech and AI and job cuts and AI washing and where the future opportunities lie. If you've been impacted by any of the big tech job cuts, or if you've been told that AI is the reason why your role is either being changed or being removed from an organization, I would love to hear from you. Techtalk@newstalk.com is the email address. Elsewhere this week, we heard that Sky Ireland sent around 200 Dodgybox users across the country legal letters threatening action if they pay for illegal streaming services again. This is part of the bigger clampdown on dodgy boxes and the illegal streaming of content. Sky Ireland is very much leading the charge in this regard. Ronan Murphy, chairman of Smart Tech 247, spoke to Claire Byrne earlier this week and explained how Sky got access to the user information.
Up until now, the legal battle with these dodgy boxes has predominantly been a game of whack-a-mole against the distributors, right? These are the guys who sell the boxes in pubs or online. This court order completely changes the game. By forcing Revolut to hand over customer data, Sky has literally jumped straight over the consumer's living room wall and are in a position where they've gone straight to the consumer. I do think it's important to note, because looking at a lot of the kind of the blowback from this, it's important to state that, you know, Revolut were not acting as the moral police here trying to catch the pirates. When they were approached by the Sky Television lawyers, they essentially told them, look, we're neutral in this. We have strict GDPR laws to uphold. We cannot and we will not hand over customers' banking history just because, you know, a private company like Sky asks for it. If you want this data, you got to go get a high court judge to order it. And once that judge signs the order, Revolut had no choice but to comply. So they were strictly treating this as a matter of legal compliance. And I think the key takeaway here for a lot of people is that this completely explodes the myth that these financial apps that are on people's phones are some kind of, you know, digital wild west where transactions are hidden. Revolut is a fully licensed, regulated bank. They are subject to the exact same laws as the high street banks, AIB, Bank of Ireland, etc. And if you leave a digital paper trail on your phone, a court order can have that pulled. So people are really starting to wake up to the fact that these apps don't offer that kind of anonymous service that they envisaged that they might.
Yeah, that's Ronan Murphy, Murphy, chairman of SmartTech 247, explaining to Claire Byrne how Sky Ireland managed to get the information of the approximately 200 dodgy box users in this country to send them those legal letters. It's very interesting to see that this approach is being taken. There are some questions as to whether or not anything can or would come of these legal letters if users do indeed continue to utilise the dodgy boxes. Some people I have seen and heard commenting about this are saying that just because somebody paid for a dodgy box does not mean that they are the ones using the dodgy box, which could prove to be a bit of a headache for Sky if they were to try and take this legal action any further. Again, I know this is a very contentious issue. Anytime we've spoken about it on the programme, people get in touch saying, I know that it's illegal, but at the same time, I can't afford to pay all of the money for the Sky, the Virgin, the streaming services, the broadband, all the other bits and pieces. It is an expensive hobby, I suppose, for want of a better phrase, to engage in this type of media. But as Sky are saying, that it's costing their business and it will impact jobs and the industry and the sector as a whole. So something needs to be done. But I would love to hear, have you received one of these letters? Is it going to deter you from using the dodgy box? You can email me techtalk@newstalk.com. Now, the Ryder Cup at Adair Manor has finally been added to the register of designated events and venues to prevent online ticket touts from scalping Irish fans. Deputy John Clendenin sent out a press release this week stating that Adair Manor has been added to be covered under the Sale of Tickets, Cultural, Entertainment, Recreational and Sporting Events Act 2021. This is something that I think is much needed, but it's also a good excuse for us to look back at how Ireland, the ticketing companies and artists have looked to tackle the touts. Ticket touting, the reselling of tickets at inflated prices, has long plagued Ireland's live events sector. Fans missed out on concerts and matches as tickets were rapidly bought and resold at many multiples of their original price. Proposals to tackle it date back years, but momentum gathered in 2017 when a private members' bill was introduced by Noel Rock and Stephen Donnelly to curb the practice. Behind the scenes, a technological arms race was already underway. Automated bots were increasingly used to buy tickets in bulk within seconds, locking out genuine fans and fueling the resale markets. That push culminated in the Sale of Tickets, Cultural, Entertainment, Recreational and Sporting Events Act 2021, signed into law in July 2021 and brought into force on July 31st that year. The core measure is simple but far-reaching. Firstly, reselling tickets above face value is illegal for designated events and venues. Both online and in-person resale markets are covered. Sellers must provide transparent information, including original price and seat details. And violators face fines of up to €100,000 or imprisonment for up to 2 years. Only certain high-demand events and venues are covered, those formally designated by the minister. Charities and amateur sports clubs are exempt when they're selling tickets for fundraising purposes. While the 2021 Act targeted resale profiteering, policymakers soon identified new gaps. One major concern? Dynamic pricing. Dynamic pricing is where ticket sales rise in real time as demand increases. Critics argue it can replicate the effect of touting, even though no resale occurs. A proposed 2024 amendment bill seeks to ban this practice, signalling that Ireland's approach continues to evolve. At the same time, regulators such as the Competition and Consumer Protection Commission are actively monitoring ticket sales and investigating potential breaches of consumer law. Legislation alone cannot solve the problem. Technology is now central to enforcement and prevention. Modern ticketing systems are deploying AI-driven algorithms to detect suspicious purchase patterns and block automated buying, device fingerprinting and behavioural analytics to identify bots before checkout, and dynamic QR codes and identity-linked tickets to prevent unauthorised resale. These tools aim to stop touting at its source before the tickets even reach the secondary market. So, has the law worked? Dozens of venues and events have been designated under the Act. Authorities report no prosecutions at this stage and full compliance from ticket sellers for designated events. Supporters say this reflects deterrence. The threat of significant penalties may be enough to change behaviour. However, the story isn't over yet. Questions in 2026 highlight ongoing scrutiny of enforcement, investigations, and whether stronger measures are needed. Ireland's crackdown on ticket touting represents one of the most robust attempts in Europe to regulate the resale market. But as technology evolves and demand for live events surges, the challenge is shifting, not disappearing. From legislation to AI enforcement, the fight for fair access to tickets is ongoing. And for fans across the country, the outcome still matters every single time their favourite artist comes to town. There you have it. I would love to hear from you if you are one of the many people who has seen on Instagram in particular the resale of tickets not through official means. I saw quite a bit, obviously enough, when Oasis were in town, people taking to their Instagram saying reselling two tickets, DM me for the details, you can pay me on Revolut. And so while Ticketmaster, for example, has done great work to facilitate the resale of tickets at face value on its platform, it can't prevent people from doing what they want elsewhere. So what is the solution here? Techtalk@newstalk.com is the email address. Right, when we come back here on News Talk, I'm going to jump into that inbox and answer your tech questions. Welcome back to the final part of this week's Tech Talk. This is Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. As ever, if you have any questions for me, pop them in to techtalk@newstalk.com or you'll get me on Instagram @JessKellyNT. Plenty came in last week on the back of Derek Riley of Nevo.ie. So Derek will be back with us next month to answer all of those questions. And there are plenty there for me, which we'll get to in just a quick minute's time. But first, I want to pay a mini tribute to this man.
Welcome, welcome one and all to The Late Show. I'm your host, Stephen Colbert. Sit down. If you're just tuning into The Late Show, you missed a lot. Tonight is our final broadcast from the Ed Sullivan Theater, where... No, we were lucky enough to be here for the last 11 years. Yes. All right, that was... Can't take this for granted. Though actually, technically, our first show back in July of 2015 was from a public access station in Monroe, Michigan, for an audience of 12 people. And show business being what it is these days, it's probably where you'll see me next.
Yeah, that's the incredible Stephen Colbert, who finished The Late Show earlier this week. It's very sad to see him go because he is one of the most engaging, quick-witted, sensitive, intelligent, brilliant personalities on television, in my humble opinion. Sir Paul McCartney was on the programme and made a presentation to Colbert of an image of the Beatles, and it was of the Beatles in the US, and he kind of said, you know, that's back when the US was the land of the free, and sure, hopefully it still is, essentially. I guess it is the true end of an era. I think since Conan O'Brien stepped away from his show a number of years ago, now The Late Show is gone, that broad spectrum of engaging entertainment seems to be on the way out on linear television. Now, of course, you know, we could see Stephen Colbert pop up with a Netflix show or a show on some of the streamers at some stage, which is fantastic. But I think what's really interesting is if you look at the model of Conan O'Brien and what he has done since he's left linear television, he has his travel show, where there's a few documentaries every few months that come out and it shows him visiting different parts of the world. He was in Ireland not that long ago. He also has the incredibly successful Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend podcast, which if you haven't listened to it, you should listen to it. But not only is it a podcast, it's also on YouTube. And if you look at some of the numbers that they're getting on their videos on YouTube, it just shows that the audience is still there for him. And rather than people having to tune in to watch him at 11:30 at night, he's gone to where the audience is. He's on, you know, social media. He's on YouTube. He's in their Spotify feed or wherever they're listening to their podcasts. And I think that's what's going to become the norm across the media landscape over the next wee while. It'll be very interesting to see what Colbert does next. I think David Letterman obviously had his Netflix show as well. Seth Meyers has multiple podcasts. Jimmy Fallon and Jimmy Kimmel don't. But there's no saying what's going to happen. We know, obviously, Jimmy Kimmel's been taken off the air previously because of comments he made in relation to the president, or because stuff the president didn't like and so on. It's massively concerning on so many different levels. But I just wanted to acknowledge and declare my love and adoration of Stephen Colbert. I never got to see the show live. When I was in New York last year, I got to do the tour of SNL, which was incredible. And I walked down to the building, the Ed Sullivan Theatre, where Stephen Colbert did The Late Show. But I couldn't go in, unfortunately. But even just to stand outside, get the pictures of the lights, the name and all the rest, it was nice. It was a nice moment. But it is a massive loss, in my humble opinion, to broadcasting that Stephen Colbert's Late Show is no more. If you're looking for something to do later on, go back and watch clips of it online. Like, it's just, it's pure entertainment. Some of his interviews are very moving, they're very touching, and some of them are just bananas. He was great, and as I said, I can't wait to see what he does next. The final thing I have to tell you before we get into the inbox is on my left wrist at the moment is the Whoop 5.0 MG, as it's always there. And on my right wrist is the new Google Fitbit Air. So this is a new wearable, obviously enough, by Google and Fitbit. Google bought Fitbit a number of years ago, and this is their first wearable that doesn't have a screen. It's been appearing right across my social feeds over the last wee while as the competitor to Whoop. Now, because of media embargoes, I'm not allowed to tell you much about it until the 26th, which is Tuesday of next week, and I will have initial first impressions and all the rest for you then. But essentially, it's a fitness tracker. It's going back to that notion of being a fitness tracker rather than a smartwatch. And out of the box, I can tell you that the band is much thinner than the Whoop. The device itself that has the sensor is much smaller than the Whoop. And all of this, again, you can see if you look at any of the unboxing videos that exist on social media. I'm doing a side-by-side comparison of the Whoop and the Fitbit Air, because the Fitbit Air is €99, whereas Whoop is more expensive, and you also need to subscribe to get the full impact of it, blah, 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 blah. So it is more expensive. The Whoop is more expensive. But as I've said previously, I love the Whoop. So I'll be interested to share my thoughts with you over the next wee while in comparing the two devices. But if you have any questions or queries, again, the email is techtalk@newstalk.com. And speaking of that, let's jump in to the inbox and see what we have here now. So the first one this week is from John, who says, I'm seeking some guidance as my Three mobile contract ends on June 6th. I'm currently paying £65 a month for my package, the 3 Freedom 5G and iPhone 14 with 128 gigs of storage. My phone is still in good condition and I mainly use it for calls, email and normally family photos. I don't need great quality camera as I don't post social media content, etc. Could you recommend a SIM-only option that will give me better value? I live in Ennis, County Clare, if coverage is relevant. Okay, so John, thank you very much for the level of detail because that does help give a more specific recommendation. So what I would say is there's absolutely better value out there. If you want to stick with the 3 family, so 48 is 3's digital mobile network, and they would be significantly cheaper and operate obviously on the 3 network. So that could be something to look at. The one that I'm always recommending is GOMO. So gomo.ie, if you go on there, it's £15 a month and you get your calls, text, data. You can then buy a phone outright. And what I recommend, if you were moving to, say, a GOMO or 48 or even Clear Mobile, which is Vodafone's digital mobile network, I would then recommend you go and look at getting a refurbished device. So the website that I've bought from many times is the it's mintplus.ie, which is an Irish company. So you can get refurbished iPhones. I'm just opening the website here now. So if you, what did you say to me you have at the moment? Like you have an iPhone 14, which is still in good condition. So I think, you know, you're not going to get anything dramatically better where you, given what you've told me in your email, would appreciate and would be worth spending the extra money. If you need a new phone or if you wanted a newer phone, you can go to Mint Plus or Refurbed and get a 15 or 16, iPhone 15 or 16, if you were bothered. Personally speaking, I would still be happy with the iPhone 14, but I would look to move to whether it is GOMO or 48 or Clear Mobile. You'll be paying less than £20 a month, saving yourself instantly about £40 a month, and then just buying a phone when you need it. So if your iPhone 14 is doing you for another year or 2 years, awesome. At that stage, then go and buy a refurbished phone. It'll cost you €300 or €400. Pay for that outright out of the money that you've saved by consistently reducing your phone bill by £40 a month. So I do hope that helps. Let me know if you do it and how it goes for you. Next up, we have an email here from Emma, and it's in a similar vein. It's great. It makes my heart so happy that so many of you are on the move. She says, "Hi, Jess, looking for some advice, please. So I keep hearing you recommend switching from bill pay to a digital network." Guilty. "I've been with 3 for years and I'm out of contract with my bill pay plan each month. It's costing a lot, around €45 to €50. I'd like to stay with the 3 network as I know they have good reception. Which would you recommend, Tesco Mobile or 48? My phone is for personal, not business. I would like more data as I keep exceeding my data some months on my current bill plan. Any advice would be great. I'm probably looking at getting another bill pay plan." I've lost the ability to speak. Stunning. So I would look at 48 because they are the they're 3's digital mobile network. So if you know you have the coverage, that'll do the job. I'm just on the website here now. So for, let's just have a quick look through here now. So for £9.99 a month for the first 6 months, you're getting unlimited 5G data. You're getting 5,000 minutes, 5,000 texts, and 20 gigs of EU and UK roaming. After the first 6 months, it goes up to £12.99 a month. So again, you're saving a significant chunk of change by making the move. You know the network does the job for you. It's very simple. You can simply go onto their website, order the SIM, you activate the SIM, and then you're laughing. The way it works is it's a 30-day rolling contract. So if for whatever reason you don't like it, you can just cancel after 30 days and then jump on over to another, go back to 3 if you wanted. But I've heard great things about 48 because, again, it's using that same mobile network that you like. So I do hope that helps. And finally, for this week, we have an email here from Antoinette who says, "Hi, Jess, I have several old tablets and mobile phones that are quite old. I cannot restart them to check / erase any content that might still be on them. Can you advise the best way to dispose of these environmentally and also be sure that data cannot be retrieved on them? Many thanks." Yes, Anne, this is a really good question. And I think it's a good time of year for people who are doing that spring clean kind of vibe. So yes, if you go into, so say they're Google devices, if you go into your Google account and if you can find the device and you can erase the data remotely and you can delete, you can disassociate it from your account. Equally, if they're iOS devices, if you can log into your iCloud, go to devices, you should see it there and you can again delete them from your account and disassociate them from your account. Once you've done that, you can bring them to your local Wii Center. So W-E-E-E. If you go to their website, it's just weeeireland.ie and you'll find a list of locations around the country. You can bring them. You can also, I'm seeing here on their website, you can request collection or delivery as well, which is quite cool. But yeah, the Wii facilities are the best way to dispose of any technology environmentally friendly, and it's free to do. So there you go. Right, that is it, unfortunately, for this week. We are up against the clock. If you've missed any of the show, you can listen back in full on the Go Loud app. Just search for Tech Talk. I'm going to be back with Anton Savage on Monday's News Talk Breakfast. But in the meantime, have a great weekend.